Good evening to everyone around the world, particularly the teams that are watching at this moment in time. I want to also say hello to the teenagers who have spent the last couple weeks. I know they're there in their final stretch at AYC Ambassador Youth Camp. I've been really looking forward to speaking to all of you for the past week or so. When I was assigned this task, I got excited. I've been to AYC in the past a couple years ago, and it's always a joy to see your faces. Tonight it's going to be a little bit difficult because I'm streaming out to you, you're streaming in, you can see me, but I can't see you. And I also want to welcome the parents too. Any parents that are out there listening, it's very important. It's wonderful that you have an opportunity to hear what we're talking to the teens about. It's certainly our job to support you in your parenting role and anyone else, too. I know we're live on several of the platforms, YouTube. So greetings to everyone and anyone. Tonight is a Bible study. We're going to jump right in. And I know this is going to be a little bit difficult, but I did it on purpose. I'd like to start off by asking the teens by a show of hands. Again, I know I can't see you, but some of you who are together can see each other. How many of you know what you want to do following high school? Now, again, I can't see you, and I'm sure most of you raised your hands. Some of you who are younger, maybe 13, 14, 15 years of age, still in middle school, maybe haven't started high school yet, aren't thinking about that quite yet. Regardless, how many of you are thinking college is your future? Maybe you raised your hand again, and again, I'll refer back to your hand in a moment here. Or maybe a job. How many of you are thinking about going right into the workforce right away? Well, regardless, both are great. Either works. And you're going to see that. And some of you who are watching may already have chosen or are either in college or opted for entering right into the workforce already. You have a job. You're earning a paycheck. Regardless of where you are currently in your thinking, deciding to pursue a degree or enter directly into the workforce, I will tell you it's an important decision. I would argue that it's probably one of the most or the most important decision that you've made so far as a young person in your life. Now, I'd like you to consider a reason why this decision is so important. You probably have a lot of other reasons why you think it's important, but I want to share one particular reason why I think that decision that you're going to make is very important. Maybe one that you never considered before. I can tell you I did not consider this reason when I was at your age. Let's turn to Psalm 39 to begin. Psalm 39. I have a little bit of a head start. I had my Bible already open. There's no way that you could have known where I was going to turn to first, but Psalm 39. And David's sharing some of his thoughts here. And we're going to begin in verse 4. It says, Lord, make me to know my end and the measure or the length of my days. Now, he's asking God to reveal to him what his last day is. Now, can you imagine for a moment if somebody told you the exact day, maybe even the hour, maybe the minute or the second that you were going to die? How would that make you think? What would that do in terms of all the plans that maybe and the ideas that you've been developing in your mind? They let you know what that is. Would it not change how you think about things? He goes on to say, what is it? That I may know how frail I am. I know when I get sick, that's the moments when I feel most frail. But when I was a young person, I didn't think I was frail. I had my life ahead of me. It wasn't until those moments that I was really, really sick that I may have started contemplating how frail my life truly is. And he goes on, behold, you have made my days as a handbreadth, as the width of a human hand. And my age is as nothing before you. Now, we'll stop reading there. I want to confess something. I turned 56 this year. And I remember like it was yesterday thinking about whether to attend college or a job when I was your age, what I was going to do after high school. That's nearly 40 years ago. And I remember some of the factors that I weighed when I was contemplating that decision. There were several factors that were influencing heavily where I was going to do, what decision I was going to make. But I'm not going to share those factors with you just yet. But I can certainly tell you what I was not considering, what I should have been considering. At 16 and 17 years of age, I did not consider or ponder how short human life is. I did not appreciate this fact about human life. Many of you at camp may appreciate it if I, you know, mention this, not because you're old like me, but think how fast the past 2 weeks have gone. Think for a moment. Go back in time 2 weeks, and I'm sure you can remember stepping onto the campsite and someone shining that smile right at you, someone that a familiar face that you hadn't seen maybe a year ago. Or maybe you just met somebody new that you had never met before at camp. And you hugged, you embraced, maybe there were tears of joy because you were seeing each other after a long time. You've blinked, and now you're only a day or so out from leaving camp. And you're going to blink again, and you're going to be hugging those same people, and maybe the tears this time are going to be tears of sadness because you're not going to see each other for a very long time. I'm sure you can stay in touch, but I think you get an idea of maybe even what my parents, the people of my parents' age, are at right now. They turned 80. They were here recently at headquarters for the summer picnic. What a wonderful time they had to mingle and enjoy time with people who live God's way of life. I went down and saw them last Sunday. They're getting frail in their age. And if you were to ask them, they were going to tell you that their lives are a series of blinks. They can remember, and I'm grateful they can still remember, when they were children. But they could tell you that when they blinked, they were in high school and they met each other for the first time and became friends. They would then tell you they blinked again and it was post-high school and they were married and my mother was pregnant with my oldest brother, the first boy of the family, and they blinked again and within 5 years, by the age they were 24 or 23, they had six little children in their home, 1 5 years of age and two twins that were infants. They blinked again, and their house was empty. All their boys went off to college, went on and found the loves of their lives, if I could put it that way, and got married, and they blinked again, and they had grandchildren. They blinked again, and those grandchildren were already out of college. They went to high school and graduated, got married, blinked again, and now they have great-grandchildren. And they blinked as of late and found themselves to be 80 years of age, frail. And they understand how quickly, over a series of blinks, how fast life goes by. I ultimately decided to attend college when I got out of high school. I'm not suggesting I would have changed my mind after reading this verse back then. I may have still gone to college, but this verse would have impacted how I planned and prepared for that next step in my life. How I lived would have been drastically different if I only understood how fast life could go by. I've had a series of blinks, and here I am at 56 years of age. I want you to look at your hand, that same hand that you raised a few moments ago, and just measure it, and then pull your hand out. And I look at my own hand and I look at this space between my fingers and I can more fully appreciate what King David was saying at that moment. Now, if I have my Bible history correct, he died at the age of about 70 or 71. I think he took over the kingdom, began reigning when he was 30, and he reigned 40 years over Israel. He died at 71 years of age. Young folks, consider what King David knew. God is eternal. Your lifespan, our natural lives to him, is nothing in terms of time, but everything in terms of his creation. He lives in eternity. God thinks with forever in his mind. His plans for you are eternal ones. His perspective is entirely eternal. The question is, does your perspective about life include eternity? Your life decisions, whether it's to go to college or to work. If you appreciate the brevity of your physical lives, it will help you make decisions based on a desire to make your life count, no matter how long or short it may be. So tonight, my purpose is not to tell you which decision to make, college or work. That's not my goal. My goal tonight is to share some advice based on biblical principles that will prepare you for true success, regardless of which one you choose. So let's continue reading here in verse 5. King David goes on to say, "Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Surely every man walks in a vain show." All that means is they walk around like show-offs or showing off. "Surely they are disquieted." They're worried in vain. They're worried about nothing. Emptiness. "He heaps up riches and knows not who gets it." And now he says something very important. "Lord, what am I waiting for?" He asks God. He concludes, "My hope is in you." Think of all that King David had achieved in his life, the wealth that he accumulated. By any measure, humanly speaking, he was a success. He had it all. But verse 7 seems to read as though he was nearing the end of his life, or at least he was taking a sincere, hard look back on his life. I said a moment ago, I weighed a lot of factors as I was approaching that decision about going to college. Here are some of the factors that I weighed at the time. I wanted to impress my parents. I wanted to impress my family. I wanted to prove to them something. I wanted to impress my friends. Some of my friends decided not to college, but I thought I could impress them by going off to college. And not just any college, a college that had a good football program. I wanted to impress my brothers. I wanted to follow in my two older brothers' footsteps and maybe surpass the achievements that they went on to achieve. I wanted to impress not just family, not just friends. I wanted to impress my future classmates at college. I wanted to go on and study medicine so I could be a rich doctor. And if I'm speaking in full transparency, I wanted to impress a girlfriend that I had at the time. I wanted to prove to her I was the man. Well, first of all, I was definitely not considering the brevity of life. That was not one of my factors. I certainly wasn't taking seriously how to make my life truly count, to make it matter. And second, much of my decision-making, as you can tell, not just whether to attend college or get a job, it was driven by vanity, a selfish ambition. I wanted to impress people. I wouldn't say that I was necessarily a show-off. My family wouldn't have tolerated that. My mom and dad certainly wouldn't have tolerated a show-off in their house. But I certainly didn't have problems showing off every once in a while. I was driven by selfish ambition. And who I wanted to impress most, who we oftentimes want to impress the most, are ourselves. I wanted to impress myself. I wanted to live up to an image that I was building in my mind as a young man that ultimately I couldn't have lived up to. Well, that dream of becoming a doctor, anybody who knows me, I failed miserably at that one. And my wife certainly would be happy to know that my goal to impress my girlfriend, well, that didn't work either, because it didn't take long after I was heading off to college for her to break up with me, cut me loose. Now, you would think that I would have learned from those life experiences as a young man, right? Well, here's what it says. This is what David says. "Even at my best back then," whatever that best might be, "it was all vanity, every single bit of it. And looking back, my biggest regret was not failing to become a rich doctor. It wasn't failing to go on to marry a high school sweetheart. Definitely not. And even though I don't regret choosing college over a job, I do regret how I lived my life and how I failed to make my life count for who matters most, God. Now, you might be sitting there saying, well, that's not my case. I'm not trying to impress anyone. I don't show off. I'm not a show off. I don't try to impress anyone. I'm certainly not trying to impress myself. My goal in life is not to make a lot of money. Well, you might be able to convince me, but I have Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. I have King Solomon, who had great understanding and a vast amount of experience to shed light on how to see yourself. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Now, here's encouraging words. Wonderful advice for you. Verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, and that would include lady. Rejoice in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Enjoy yourself. It says, walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes. Enjoy your youth. Enjoy what you do. Some of you are on summer vacation right now. Like I said, many of you are at camp right now. Enjoy the things that you're doing now. But here's what King Solomon goes on to say. But know this, that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. And here's his concluding statement. For childhood and youth are vanity. He doesn't say that childhood and youth includes vanity. He says our entire childhood and youth are vanity. In other words, what he's saying is enjoy all of these things. It's wonderful. But when the rubber hits the road, when you become an adult, that's when things need to change. Now, what I find particularly inspiring about this portion of Scripture when I was meditating on it and preparing for the Bible study, I realized something. I don't know if it never occurred to me before. God did not inspire King Solomon to speak to babies, toddlers, or young elementary kids, students. And he wasn't even speaking to adults either. Think about this. King Solomon is talking directly to you. If you count the number of times you or yours there, I believe it's 9 times. King Solomon said, you. He's not even talking to me. The only thing I felt like is that I was listening in on something that God inspired King Solomon to say to you all, and as a minister, it's my job to just make sure everybody heard what he said. It says, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. Meaning, things that you didn't know to do when you were a toddler and a child, but now you've learned to do that aren't in alignment with God's will, with God's commandments and laws. Put that away from you. That's when you learn to do things that don't align with God's life, when you're young like that. Again, God is providing valuable foundational knowledge to help you succeed, no matter if you decide to work or go to college. God is beginning to speak to you in your life at this age. I find that extraordinary. It never hit me before. And it's not by coincidence that the church allows young ladies and men from the age of 13 and upwards to start attending Ambassador Youth Camp. We know you're at an age when God can communicate His plan, His ways, His commandments, His laws, His will for you more directly. The Bible that's on your lap right now, you can open it up and you can read it and begin to comprehend. And I know that's a fact because King Solomon wouldn't have spoken to you in the way that he did unless you could understand what God wanted to say to you. You're now at an age where you can listen to messages by our pastor general or the ministry and begin to connect dots between what your life aligns with when they say good things and when your life is not aligning with certain things when they're bad. Listen to the lectures. Now you're at an age where you can sit and listen to lectures by the camp director and other staff and administrators and comprehend how it impacts your life. And God wants you alongside other youth who are facing the same important decisions in a world full of vanity. You're old enough to understand that God, as it says, will judge your actions. Now, so here's my first piece of advice. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 4. First Bible principle relative to success. Ephesians chapter 4. And verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you hereafter walk not as Gentiles, or as your peers, you could say, because Paul was talking to the Ephesians who were Gentiles. Walk not as others walk, in the vanity of their mind. Every young man and every young lady listening, I cannot make this decision for you. You can't make this decision for me. It's not only your decision to make. There's an incredibly important word in this verse. The word is hereafter. That word hereafter, it means from this point forward. Before you go home to camp, before you go to sleep tonight, if you're somewhere else in the world listening from your home, you can decide now. Some of the decisions that we make are allowed to be made now. Maybe you didn't make that decision yesterday or the day before, but you can make that decision now, because this decision is far more important than a choice that you'll make between college and getting a job. You know why? Because making this choice will help you be the best college student or the best employee that any university or college could ever want. I see it all the time. I see it amongst the youth who get jobs. Once they go there, they see the managers and supervisors sees that kids that are brought up in the church and understand God's way don't act the way other employees do. They don't steal time. They arrive on time to work. They put every effort into doing what they've been asked to do. I see it with the adults in the church, members, baptized members. When employers get their hands on men and women of God, they don't want to let them go because they're not like everyone else. I see it all the time, as I said. But most importantly, why would you not want to walk like others do in the vanity of their minds? Because you will be the student or employee that God would expect. And this is how I see it, and I'm seriously speaking. If you feel you're ready to make bigger decisions in your life, like to go to college or to go to work, you should also be ready to resist acting like most people your age. Because vanity clouds judgment. Mine, it'll cloud my judgment, it'll cloud your judgment, it'll cloud my wife's judgment, it'll cloud your friend's judgment. Anyone who walks in the vanity of his or her mind has clouded judgment. Look at the world today, the music industry, fashion, Hollywood, technology, sports, you name it. Everyone sells a unique image. I find that ironic. They're trying to sell you a unique image so that everyone in the world imitates that image, and then it doesn't become unique anymore. So they always have to reinvent their image or improve their image. Colleges, companies, celebrities, star athletes, you know what they count on? They count on your vanity, our vanity. So you buy the image or images that they're selling. They profit off of our vanity. Banks and credit card companies How can they charge 30% interest, 24% interest? Vanity? Because vanity drives consumers, even you young people at a very young age, to buy beyond your means. Don't get me started, because this is a particular sensitive area for me working in the business office and having a business background. I give young people advice all the time on when to get a credit card, what credit limit you should have, how to cash flow, how to live within your means, how much of your credit card should you ever have as an unpaid balance. Zero would be ideal, but there's even an ideal balance. I can give them all the advice in the world. But I know in the back of my mind that if vanity takes hold and they start walking like everyone else in the vanity of their minds, sooner or later, it's going to trip them up. We buy phones we cannot afford, computers we cannot afford, cars we don't need, bigger and more luxurious than we need, clothes we can't afford, universities. It's not good enough to go to this university. You got to go to this university because the degree in business at this university is better than this one. Universities even sell based on vanity. Instead of paying $20,000 a year to go to school or $15,000, you pay $100,000 because of the emblem that the school carries. My advice about college or work, do not be a follower. Don't follow your peers. Don't follow your classmates, your coworkers, anyone living in the vanity of their minds. Now, if they're setting a great example at work or at college, certainly those are the kind of people you want to partner up with because you're going to propel you on to succeed. But be careful. Stand out in a good way. Make your life count. Make what you do count toward God. Because at the end of the day, impressing Him is what really matters. Now, for those of you who are saying, I'm decided, I sincerely want to resist the pulls and influences of vanity, of this image in my mind that I keep trying to live up to, but I keep failing. Or living in line with the vanity and the desires of the peers that you have at school. Here's one of the most effective ways to eliminate that. To eliminate the fog of vanity from clouding your judgment. Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30. If you're determined, if you're making that decision hereafter not to walk as others walk in the vanity of their mind, here's a solution for you. Proverbs 30. Go back to Proverbs. And we'll read just verses 8 and 9. Now, this is Agur. If you read at the top, he's the son of Yake. Now, Agur is only one time in the Bible. And this is what is recorded from him. Verse 8, remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, or else I'll become fool, and I'll end up denying you. And I'll say, who is the Lord? Or poor, and end up stealing, and take the name of my God in vain. He understood what vanity can cause. And there he is, just one time in the Bible, and he gives us a powerful example. And that example is prayer. He asked God to remove vanity from his way of thinking, from his mindset. You can too. If you ask God to remove vanity from your life, if you make that decision today to not walk like others in the vanity of their minds or in the vanity of your mind, and you ask God to remove vanity from your life, it demonstrates how serious you are about not wanting vanity to control your life and your life decisions. You know, I looked at maturity when I thought, when you'd have asked me when I was younger, what's maturity? I would have said, well, being senior in high school. I wanted to be the top. I finally made it. I was a freshman and I couldn't wait to be a senior so I could walk in the halls towards the end of the school year, about to graduate, and we were the big dogs. Where I thought maturity was going off to college and getting a degree. I thought maturity would be earning my first real paycheck so I could buy the car that I wanted, or maybe a small place or a house. I thought maturity was getting married. Now I could say I was mature. I couldn't be more wrong. Do you know how many childish, immature high school seniors I knew or I know? I was one of them. College students, corporate executives, doctors, lawyers, nurses, all of them. Many of them married. These milestones in life are certainly an indicator of getting older, but in no way do they equate to maturity. And I had no idea as a teenager how important prayer is to growing up, to maturing. How important it is, how vital it is for success. And not just prayer, the content of our prayer. What we ask for. Why we ask for what we're asking. It shows how mature we are. And over time, if you continue and you ask God to remove vanity and you stay away from those who walk in the vanity of your mind, you're going to see that your prayers will become more mature. Not only can you decide right now not to walk like the rest of the world, but you can also start by asking God to remove vanity. Because you've also reached an age that you should be praying. You should be talking to God. Why? Because God's talking to you. We already read it in Ecclesiastes 11. Why wouldn't you talk to Him too? He's talking to you. Not because your parents tell you to, or because I encourage you to. You know why you should pray? Not only because God, because you need it. You need it for your success. So I want to talk about success. Let's see what the Bible teaches about true success. Because all of that I've shared with you so far, I shared because God wants you to succeed. Not just me, I want you to succeed too. He wants you to succeed plain and simple at college or at work. And in a moment, we're going to address what true success means. Maybe you think going to college right out of high school is your future. I asked that earlier. But that's not the case for everyone. I'd like to share with you an example of an individual that I'm very close to that we went to high school together and graduated at the same time. And we chose the same starting path after high school. We both decided we were going to go to college. I went to one college, and this individual went to another college. And not long at that college, this person had to leave that college under certain circumstances. So this individual decided that he was going to pick up and come to the college where I was attending. And so we attended college for a short period of time. But it wasn't long after that that this individual flunked out. Flunked out of college, second try. So enlisted in the Navy. Thought that would be the route. Several years later, enlisted into the Army Reserve and was deployed to Iraq and served a tour in Iraq. Thanks to the GI Bill, being a veteran, he attended Penn State University at the age of 40 plus years. It was not until then did this former dropout graduate as an elementary teacher. And not only did he graduated with a higher GPA than I did. I think he graduated cum laude or magnum cum laude. And so it would be no surprise to tell you that he was hired with that kind of academic resume. But you know what? The story doesn't end there. You know what happened? He left teaching, and he hasn't returned. Currently, and he's happily working at the Veterans Administration. He never went back to the career or that he was so wanting in college. In the end, college was not for him. But I'm glad this individual didn't accumulate a lot of student debt because he basically and got all of it paid for because he served. And I'm sure he uses some of the skills that he acquired going through the educational system that help him currently in his job. And I share this because college may not be for you. You may think it is right now, but it may not turn out to be the case. Maybe work is the answer now. Maybe college later. I want to continue with the subject of success because, quite honestly, whether you go to college now or later, maybe you get a job now or go to college later, or maybe you start at one company and end up at another company, none of these scenarios have much to do with true success. I said earlier, God wants you to succeed. I want you to succeed. We want you to succeed. Mr. Pack wants you to succeed. Mr. Pack wrote a booklet about this. It's called The Laws to Success. It's a small booklet. I was going to bring it up here, but it's green, so it may have affected the camera shot. But if you haven't read it, I encourage you to read it. And if you have read it, read it again. And if you get an employment or a job, keep it with you and refer back to it every once in a while. If you go off to college, keep it on your nightstand, at your dorm, or in your room if you're commuting. In it, Mr. Pack lays out 7 laws that will help you succeed in life, including at college or work. He talks about setting the right goal. He talks about educating yourself. Of course, higher education is obviously educating yourself. But even if you're employed, you know, there's plenty of platforms and plenty of ways online to get free courses that will enhance your skills where you may decide to work. You can take those. Talks about good health. If you remember back, it says, give me the food that's convenient for me. Remember we read that? That's the third one, good health. Living a lifestyle that's healthy. If you're keeping count, fourth one is drive. And then you have resourcefulness and perseverance. All of these, setting the right goal, educating yourself, good health, drive, resourcefulness, perseverance, these are all vital elements to achieving success. But Christ warned his disciples of the following. For what shall it profit a man? In other words, you put this all together, all 6 laws. If you shall gain the whole world, in other words, you become a conqueror, so successful that you become the richest man in the world. What is it all for if you shall gain the whole world and lose your own life? Now, I want to read a short excerpt from The Laws to Success. It's on page 24 for reference. Here's what Mr. Pack wrote. Some few men, counted as great by the great of this world, have been able to learn and practice the first 6 laws. They have become successes in the eyes of their peers and society. But this has not made them a true success. They have fallen one giant step short of the final goal. If they had held this important key, this would not have happened. The sum of their lives would have been entirely different. And that is the setup of the 7th law. Let's turn to 1 Timothy 6 because you thought I was going to tell you what it is. Not yet. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Here's another piece of advice, a Bible principle that will help. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Godliness, verse 6, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. Now, many of you know the Bible was originally written in other languages. The Old Testament in Hebrew, the New Testament in Greek, for those of you who didn't know that, and we're simply reading the English translation. Now, this word gain, G-A-I-N, is found 29 times, but because it's a translation in English, this particular word gain is only found twice, and it's right here, 2 times in the entire Bible. It is the Greek word porismos, P-O-R-I-S-M-O-S. It comes from a word poros, and it means a way, a means of purchasing, by implication, getting money, gaining wealth. And what do you think the word great means? Well, it's the Greek word megas. And this word means exceedingly great, greatest, mighty. And when you put those two words together, they mean great wealth. So do you think the Apostle Paul was teaching young Timothy? Because he is referred to as young. Paul referred to him as young. Some sources claim he was young as in his teens when Paul started interacting with him. Late teens or early 20s. Can't prove that, but do you think he was teaching young Timothy that godliness and contentment is going to produce a ton of money in Timothy's life? I'm sorry to disappoint you. No, if you carefully read it, the Apostle Paul, what he's doing, he's explaining to young Timothy how God defines great wealth, not how the world defines it. I'm confident that the Apostle Paul was not instructing Timothy on how Christians or youth like you can make a lot of money or become filthy rich. And neither would I teach you that, even if I could. No, he said that godliness with contentment is great wealth. Let me say it a little differently. True wealth is measured by how godly and content you are, not the other way around, as we will soon read. The world doesn't know this truth, and if it did know it, it would reject it. True success is not measured by how much, young folks, is in your checking account or your savings account or your investment account or your 401k if you have one. Oh, if I only knew that. I wouldn't have gone off to college motivated for the wrong reasons, for vain reasons. I wouldn't have pursued wealth the way that I did. Looking back, I would have not accepted certain job offers based on the amount of money they were going to give me. So let's look up at verse 3. Let's keep expanding on this. I have met so many people over the years whose thinking are backwards, like mine was. Verse 3, if any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness. That's what this Bible in large part is about. It's about teaching you how to live a godly life so that you can reach the full potential that this eternal God has in mind for you. If he does this, this individual, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strife of words, whereof comes envy, strife, railings, evil surmising, suspicious, perverse disputing of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. In other words, there are people out there that think if you have a lot of money, it's proof that God is with you or you're being blessed. From such, withdraw yourself, are the instructions that Paul gave to the young Timothy. Neither college nor work helps any of us be godly. Neither helps us separate us, does it help us separate ourselves from the ways of this world. Because if you think middle school and high school are tough environments when it comes to these things, let me tell you what college campuses and workplaces are like. You will not find wholesome words nowadays much in corporate environments or on college campuses. Much less will you hear anyone quoting the words of our Lord Jesus Christ. HR departments and student services, they don't have policies in place to help ensure you have godly environments to work and study. These places are filled with people who are proud. When it comes to God and his commandments, destitute. They know nothing. And talk about places occupied by people who debate. College campuses, business environments, who are filled with envy, strife, railing, evil surmising against one another. Again, these places are destitute of the truth. Here's my advice, same as with vanity. Keep yourself at a safe distance from people who display this, simply stated. As I said, neither college nor a workplace will help you become godly. You know what you need to consider workplaces and campuses? As proving grounds. Proving grounds to that you're not going to walk in vanity despite being saturated or surrounded continuously by vanity. Why does God want you to be at camp for 2 weeks? So that you can actually be like the people that are around you. So that you're better prepared that when you go back to your homes, back to school at the end of summer, you have something to contrast that environment with. You just came from AYC. It'll help you fight and remember the things that you've learned. Remember, true success is not linked to going to college or getting a job. Now, either one can be a path to great success, but neither can make you godly. So here's my next piece of advice, a Bible principle. And it applies for work or college. It's easy to remember, but hard to live by. Verse 8, we're still here. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. Young folk, be content. Apostle Paul tells us how, which is the second part of great wealth. This is how God defines it, not me. And that's it. I'm afraid that's all there is for me to offer you. Food in your stomach and clothes on your back. I can't add to it. And I can't subtract, because if I subtracted, you'd be hungry or you'd be naked. So I can't subtract, but I wouldn't add anything either. With food and clothes, be content. Recall Proverbs 30. Give neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me. Now, it's not the only goal you're going to have in life. I understand that. But it is arguably the most essential goal when it comes to your physical existence. Certainly. And for being content. You know, I would add having a roof over your head as well. Verse 11, continuing. I said my goal tonight was not to tell you which career path to follow, but to give advice that helps you prepare for either. So I don't want to tell you which path to follow, but I will tell you what you must follow. Verse 11, follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, whereunto you are also called. You're sanctified by your parents being in the church. God is working with you. He gives you a unique opportunity. In fact, I hope those of you who are currently thinking about college, or at least was at the beginning, are pausing and thinking about maybe considering a job. Or vice versa. Maybe you're considering going right into the workplace and maybe college or a trade school might be helpful to you. We'll get to that in a moment here. But I have lived what I'm telling you as a parent. Our oldest two daughters, they're both at camp serving as counselors, supporting all of you. They're both baptized. They're examples of what I'm talking about. Let me make the long story short. College proved not to be the best path for one, but great for the other. The one began working at a law firm, gained work experience, and eventually was invited to join us here at headquarters to support the work. And she may not even realize this, but I think this week she completed her sixth year working at God's headquarters. I think it was Tuesday, August 6th. The other daughter studied 4 years at a university. And after she graduated, she went on and still continues to be a fifth grade teacher. My wife and I could not be happier for both. And the reason why we can't be more happier for both, not so much because they've been successful in their respective jobs or their respective paths. That's important. We're certainly satisfied that they've been successful in those regards. But because despite the challenges that inherently come with working in the world or going off to college in this vile world full of vanity, they remain committed to following these. I want the same for you. Even though you're not my son, even though you're not my daughter, remain committed. Follow after these things. Everyone in God's church is pulling for you. I tell that to my daughters all the time. I have two more daughters. I tell them there's no place on the planet that you're going to find people who care more sincerely about your true success than in God's church. We want you to follow God's way of life, no matter your path. We know what's at stake. And if you do, it will ensure the kind of true success that lasts for an eternity. As we begin to close, let's read one more time from the laws to success and reveal the seventh law. Quoting Mr. Pack again. At this point, an important explanation must be given to establish in your thinking the enormous capstone seventh law. In reality, though I have chosen to address it last, it is actually the first law of success. It's the first law of success and in order of importance. The seventh law, which is actually the first and most important law of success, is contact with, guidance from, continuous help of God. True success as a college student or employee, according to God and as Mr. Pack so eloquently puts it, requires godliness and contentment. And these two, godliness and contentment, require being in contact with God, getting guidance from Him and continually relying on Him. Proverbs chapter 3. It should be a memory verse. Many of you are going to recognize it when I read it because you've probably heard it countless times in messages and lectures. And verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He shall direct your paths. Again, this should be a memory verse. As you consider or maybe even reconsider your choice between going off to college or getting a job, trust God, and He will guide you. And how do you show God that you trust Him? You trust in Him. You do that through prayer. We talked about it. You do that through studying His Word. And you do that by obeying His laws and commandments. If you trust in God in these ways, that's showing that you trust in Him. When you're talking to Him, when you're studying what He says about life, about this great eternal plan that He has in mind for you, when you obey what He says so that you get where He wants you to go, brethren, His promise is clear. He's going to help you. He's going to guide you. He's going to direct you. He's going to open doors that are currently closed, that you don't know that are going to open. And He's going to close doors that are currently open. You think, this is it. That's the way I should go. And He will close them. And you know what else He's going to do? He's going to help you recognize both. You're going to get better at it. Because that's His promise. If you trust in Him, acknowledge Him in all His ways, in your ways. He's going to place, and one way He does it, He places people in your life that will provide important answers to important questions that you have. Proverbs 19 for our last scripture. Just a few pages over. verse 20. This reminded me a little bit of myself when I was younger. Hear counsel and receive instruction that you may be wise in your latter end. In other words, so that you make a wise choice, that the result proves that you were wise in the decisions or decision that you made leading up to that moment. Verse 21, there are many devices, many ideas in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. I know you have a lot of ideas. I was young once. You ask me today, on one day, what I wanted to be when I grew up, I'd tell you I wanted to be Spider-Man. Ask me another day, I wanted to be Captain America. Wait, that was preteens. As I got older, I wanted to be a doctor and all of these things. You could ask me on any, I had ideas galore. I'm sure you have them too. But you must be wise about your choices. Share your ideas. Get counsel. Accept instructions regarding your ideas. When it comes to making right choices about college or trade school or entering the workforce, don't make them your own. Talk to parents, guidance counselors, if needed, to your minister. Go to job fairs at school. Educate yourself before deciding. In fact, you could interchange those two first laws. Educate yourself on a number of things and then set your goal. They can work that way. Being an adult is not about making every decision on your own. That's not being an adult. Being an adult is understanding the importance of counsel and relying on it. They will help you count the costs. They will help you weigh the right factors, not the wrong ones like I did, motivated by vanity. They will help you see and consider and weigh the positives and the negative of each of those factors that you're weighing. Christ asked his disciples, which of you intending to build a tower sits not down first and counts the cost, whether you have sufficient to finish it? Wise counsel. There are people trained to discuss the financial implications of going to college and whether it's a prudent investment for your future. Maybe college or four-year university at this place is too expensive, and another one with the same degree is going to get you where you need to go. Or maybe it's a community college to start off. Maybe it's a trade school. There's nothing wrong with that either. Gaining a certificate in accountability instead of a four-year degree. There are options out there. You need to explore them. Do not assume anything. Educating yourself from others will help you set the right goal, as I said. If you're choosing a job, how are you going to get to and from work? Will this job affect your ability to keep God's Sabbaths, his holy days, attend the feast? Will this promotion that they're about to give you require more as such that you won't be able to obey God's commandments anymore? Seek advice, counsel. All these individuals that I mentioned will be objective about your talents, your strengths, because God's given you talents. The parable of the talents teaches us to use and multiply the gifts that God has given each one of us. And generally speaking, just I want you to remember this. You are not as talented as you think you are in certain areas. Likewise, you are more talented than you likely give yourself credit in other areas. Parents, guidance counselors, certain teachers, reliable ones, they can all objectively help you understand and assess your talents to make the best use of them. Considering your talents, considering your intelligence, not everybody's as smart as the other, all can objectively help you assess your talents to make that best use. It can help you examine the strengths that you have and what are the best avenue to enhance those and use them. If a college degree is needed to strengthen a particular talent or skill you have, then go for it under counsel. Or it may be better to enter the workforce immediately to grow and develop your God-given abilities. Again, go to a trade school, whatever. Trusting God, hearing counsel, accepting instructions, that do not go against God's eternal plan for your life will ensure true success. These are just some pieces of advice I wanted to give you tonight. The decision between college and work should be made after careful consideration of these biblical principles. But more importantly, applying these principles will ensure you enjoy true success, regardless of which one you ultimately choose. Youth, I care less. Not that I don't care, but I care less which one you choose. I care more about the kind of student or employee you will become. The God of eternity, who's looking at your life, cares even more than I do about the kind of student or employee that you will become. Trust in Him. Get guidance and accept instructions from those who will help you make the best decisions in your life. Through godliness and contentment, you will experience true success. Strive to make your life count. Enjoy these last days at camp. Be the best student, or be the best employee, or be the best at both that you can be. Thanks for joining this evening. Good night.